today quickly about the gospel of the kingdom. Even though it's not really a quick subject, Zechariah 2:5, but I declares the Lord will be a wall of fire to her on all sides, and I will be the glory in her midst. He is our defender in the toughest of times. And I'm seeing many things right now that indicate a sense of urgency over this summer. We don't know what's going to happen, but the Senate getting satellite phones and the debt ceiling deal, really not a deal, at least not for the American people. The sense among some people that something is very, very wrong, but they can't put their finger on it. Even Jim Caviezel saying that he is witnessed as part of his role in the Sound of Freedom, the horrors of human trafficking, but child trafficking particularly, and that this great evil that has been just but a whisper in the past is actually real. We have seen so many things just in the last 5 years that 20 years ago were poo-pooed, that were dismissed, denigrated, that are not only true, but they have been going on for three times that long. And so the question for all of us as Americans, as Christians, kingdom-minded Christians, is this. We know the truth. And when we know the truth will set us free. We know the truth. Are we ready to act on it? Are we ready to actually do something and stop talking? Are we ready to actually go to the school boards and make sure that the school board members that are trying to indoctrinate our kids, trying to groom our kids, are unelected, held accountable? Are we going to actually make sure that our prosecutors, our sheriffs, are prosecuting corrupt politicians? We're securing elections. See, I'm seeing today that many people are waiting for somebody else to come up with the plan. Or they think that there is some kind of grand plan out there. But listen very carefully to what I'm about to say. I have talked to the people that would know about such a plan, and there is no plan. We are the plan. And it's time for us at the local and the regional level to formulate our own plans about holding accountable those people who are trying to destroy this country, about exposing the jihadist and communist networks and stopping this attempt at destroying America by the forces of evil. It's time for us at the local and regional level, not just to rely on our elected politicians, but to actually be the government of the people that we are called to be in the Constitution. And they were called to be actually as well, at least in the Declaration of Independence. That truly this country is a country worth fighting for, that this is a country worth saving. We just celebrated Memorial Day, the day of the victorious fallen. What would they ask us to do right now based on their sacrifice? What would Jesus Christ, who also gave up his life so that we might live free, say right now to each one of us? Sitting on the sidelines and just accepting evil is not an option. And it's not Christian either. Sitting on the sidelines and just accepting that the next generation might live worse than we did, and we might actually leave a country worse off than we found it, that's not an option. Being too busy to preserve this republic, it's not an option. Or worse, justifying our own apathy under the pretenses of prayer, under the pretense of piety, is not an option. The option that we have left right now if we want to see generations yet unborn live in peace and prosperity and freedom, is for all of us to act. In whatever sphere God has given us, act, and act now. Tell the truth publicly. Risk everything for the truth to get out. Stand on the line to make sure that those people that have been perpetrating this evil are not just held accountable, but their networks, their funding, and everything else is disrupted and destroyed so they can't do this again. That is what is being asked of us, truly, in this generation. And the question is, do we say yes to that call? Do we say yes to liberty? And do we honor the fact that Americans have always fought for liberty, at least in each generation before us? And are we ready to fight? And that brings us now to a couple of things on the Daily Intelligence Briefing that I want to hit very quickly before we get our guest on. We have on today Claire Lopez. She is a former CIA operations officer. We're going to be talking about something that has been a little bit of taboo, and that is Chinese biological weapons and what they have been doing for the last, not just 20 years, but the last 50 plus. And not just the Chinese, but the United States helping them to engineer biological weapons. Now, that is a very serious thing, but you need to go to my Twitter feed and watch the most important video that is you'll probably watch this year. Kim.com posted it. But it is a detailed history of biological weapons, and specifically University in North Carolina and their connection to it. And he details it. He lays out the evidence. The hard thing, I think, for many Americans to fathom is that we would be helping our enemies with such a horrendous weapon. And we would be doing it in violation of very clear biological weapons treaties. And so that brings me to our guest today, Claire Lopez, a former CIA operations officer and strategic policy and intelligence expert with a focus on the Middle East, national defense, weapons of mass destruction, and counterterrorism, at Claire M. Lopez on Twitter. And if you are not following her, you need to. Claire, it is great to have you back on Patriot Radio again. How are you doing?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me. Glad to be with you.
Well, I wanted to talk today about Chinese bioweapons. We kind of ran out of time the last time you were on. We really need to kind of dive into this. There was this video that just came out. Kim.com posted it that showed somebody testifying before the European Parliament about the history of biological weapons going back a very, very long time, much longer than many people even understand. But first, let's talk about China. How long have the Chinese been pursuing biological weapons? Where did this all start?
Well, I would take us back to World War II, at a time when the Japanese army invaded China, set up what's called Unit 732 in Manchuria, and that was a base of operations for Japanese biological weapons, which they developed and they used against the Chinese people. Horrific stuff. Among that, they were dropping plague-infested fleas onto Chinese people in villages, for example. Well, at the end of the 1940s, the war is over. The Japanese are expelled. And Mao Zedong comes to power. And one would think that he would just have abolished, destroyed, dismantled that Unit 732 in Manchuria. But no, he took it over and developed it further. And at that time, of course, China, communist China now, was working with the Soviet Union at the time. And Stalin, who was still around at least until 1953 when he died, and they collaborated on a lot of things. China was very backward at the time, and the Soviet Union helped them develop all kinds of technology. And although it might be a little difficult to find this in open source literature, It's almost certain that they collaborated on biological weapons as well, because the Soviet Union already had an offensive biological weapons program.
But Claire, I mean, I thought there were treaties and everything that were supposed to stop this from happening. What is the purpose of this? Yeah.
The Biological Weapons Convention entered into force not until 1975. That was 1 year before Mao Zedong died, and Zhou Enlai, his deputy as well, the same year, both died in 76. So all that time between World War II and the early 1970s, when our president, Richard Nixon, shut down the United States biological weapons program for offensive purposes, during all of that time, a number of nations were developing offensive biological weapons capabilities, including the United States. But that treaty, the convention, the Biological Weapons Convention, is kind of toothless. It very explicitly defines what a biological weapon is and what it is not. What it is any viruses included, but bacteria or other biological agent that is developed with the explicit purpose of harming, killing human beings, whether in wartime or not. And anything, however, that may be developed, now this is my wording, in arrogance, in error, in greed, in haste, in hubris, in venality, whatever you want to say, those are my words, but that the purpose for that development is prophylactic, therapeutic, or for a vaccine, that cannot be, that is not a biological weapon, but rather for the purpose of biodefense, bioresearch, biosafety, and that sort of thing. And what happened after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991 is that the United States, realizing all these different kinds of labs, there were nuclear, there were chemical, and there were biological labs all over the territory of the former Soviet Union and the countries it dominated, for example, in Eastern Europe behind the Iron Curtain, all kinds of these labs and materiel. And Congress then appropriated money for DTRA, D-T-R-A, Defense Threat Reduction Agency, to go to those places and convert, help the people there to convert those labs to peaceful purposes for biodefense. We're talking bio here, but biodefense, bio research, biosafety, because at the time, early 1990s, every rogue regime on the face of the earth, from North Korea to Damascus, Syria, to Iran, to then Saddam Hussein in Iraq, were out there all ready to recruit these now soon to be out of work scientists and researchers who would not have had a way to stay at home and support their families. So we stepped in with congressionally appropriated money, kept them at home, kept them at their labs, research centers, and supervised the transition of those places to peaceful research purposes.
So recently there was the accusation made by Russia that these labs in Ukraine were being used to create biological weapons. Now, this is going to get into gain of function, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But ostensibly, what it looks like is they found where they were doing gain of function research in some of these Ukrainian biolabs, and they have proof that that's happening. And they're calling the gain of function research offensive bioweapons development. Mm-hmm. How would you answer it? I mean, it seems like a really fine line between.
It is a fine line. Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And what I would say, first of all, is that when people hear biolab, that is not automatically synonymous with bioweapons lab. And yes, it's a fine line that line defines intent. What is your intent in the work that you're doing? And again, as in the United States, it may be done in arrogance, in error, severe error, in greed, in haste, in hubris, and many other things. But if the intent and the purpose is therapeutic, prophylactic, or vaccines. It's not a bioweapon. Now, gain of function is a process by which advanced laboratory techniques like CRISPR, CRISPR is an acronym, the expansion of which I can't even begin to remember, C-R-I-S-P-R. But what it is little, think of it as little tiny scissors at the molecular level. They're basically protein enzymes, which can snip and cut segments of a genetic sequence, let's say of a virus, and either just remove that or remove that and replace it with something else. That's the capability in the labs today. That's what gain of function is, or how it's done anyway. And what it's for is to give to, let's say, a virus, qualities that it would not otherwise have had, or be able to develop in any time frame, reasonable time frame, in nature alone. And the reason that scientists who often live in a kind of a bubble of their own will say that they're doing gain of function is that so that they can get ahead of possible virus mutation, because viruses mutate madly. I mean, in as little as 24 hours, they're mutating constantly. But they want to get ahead of that process in nature by doing this in the lab so they can see where, well, maybe it would go in this direction if we, you know, if it were just out in nature alone. That's what they'll say. That's what they say they're doing. Now, gain of function can obviously be used for a bioweapons purpose. And it has been used. We know that the Soviets, the Russians, the Chinese, and many others have been doing gain of function for decades, really. They didn't need us for that. I mean, sure, our money and technology is always welcome, but they were already doing this for decades. But if you are doing that for the purpose of, getting ahead of the virus in a way that allows you to prepare in a biodefense, biosafety way, maybe even with the development of a vaccine, then that's not a bioweapon. But it's very risky research, and for this reason, it has been banned on multiple occasions in the United States, beginning with President Barack Obama. But Dr. Anthony Fauci and others at NIAID, that's National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, subordinate to the NIH, National Institutes of Health, just kind of repeatedly went around that ban and kept on doing what they were doing, as well as outsourcing through funding that comes through the taxpayer to the Department of Health and Human Services in the cabinet, from thence to NIH, to NIAID. And then Fauci was outsourcing, paying those funds to other places, for example, through the New York-based EcoHealth Alliance organization, NGO, which then went on to fund the research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So they got around these things and did gain of function anyway. Now, in Ukraine, sure, they have biolabs. They're among the places that DITRA went after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, specifically to not only get rid of their nuclear weapons, but that's a whole nother story, but to convert over their biolabs away from bioweapons labs to biodefense, bioresearch, biosafety.
So let's shift back to China and talk about intent. We talked about intent, and for at least two decades, the Chinese have been very, very clear about what they want to do with bioweapons. Uh-huh. And starting with General Key's secret speech, and I think probably one of the more impactful things that everybody should read above everything else to understand where the Chinese are coming from. Talk a little bit about what the Chinese intent is, even if they say gain of function, it probably is not for therapeutic purposes.
Absolutely true. So let's go back to 1999, when the military manual of the Chinese Communist Party, People's Liberation Army, called Unrestricted Warfare, was published. It was written by two then PLA colonels. And in that slim, it's rather a slim monograph paperback, It lists on one page a set of something like a couple dozen areas of warfare that are considered part of the military arsenal, if you will, of the Chinese Communist Party, PLA. And in there are things like economic warfare, technological warfare, space warfare, many other things. And, oh, yes, by the way, biochemical warfare. So very openly, they tell us right off, yeah, this is in our arsenal. Skip ahead now to about 2003, when the fellow that you just mentioned there, Matt, Chi Haoqian, who was at the time the defense minister of China, he's now deceased, but at that time, he gave what was, I guess, in the beginning a secret speech, but it became known. It was published. And if you go back to the blog site of good friend and a brilliant analyst of Soviet Chinese communist affairs, Jeff Nyquist, that's N-Y-Q-U-I-S-T, go back to his blog posting of September 11, 2019, if I remember this right. And he published the full English language translation text of the secret speech of Chi Haoqian. And in that speech, it very clearly says that the Chinese are working on offensive biological weapons, even biological weapons that can be tailored, if you will, in the lab to specific ethnic groups, but for the purpose of, as he said, Chi Haoqian in his speech, cleaning up America. I'm doing air quotes here because those were his words in translation. Clean up America, because the intent was that China would take us over and occupy not just the United States, but Canada, North America altogether. But very openly speaking about the use of biological weapons to accomplish that.
General Chi even used the German word Lebensraum, which means living space or living room, for the justification for it. So let's hone in on this. An ethnically based bioweapon, in other words, gain of function to specifically target a genome type for a specific ethnicity of people. In other words, people that live in North America. That is what they are trying to develop.
Well, that is what they've said they're trying to develop. I don't know how possible that is. I should explain, I don't have a scientific background or degree. I have no medical training of any kind. I've learned a great deal from some very superb scientists themselves, including the Chinese whistleblower Li Mengyan, who, as many may know, escaped out of Hong Kong, out of a WHO lab, as it were, in Hong Kong, at Hong Kong University back in 2020. She is one, but also for people who might want to learn more, as I do all the time, every day, many of our top experts are writing Substacks these days. And I would recommend the Substacks of Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Robert Malone. Take a look at the Brownstone Institute and Dr. Jeffrey Tucker. Many more I'm leaving out, but that'll give you an idea. And what I'm talking about is things that I've learned from them. I should say, you know, that I don't have a degree in anything scientific myself. But yes, gain of function is intended by the Chinese, at least in part. Now, gain of function can be anything. To make the virus more survivable in bright sunshine or in high humidity conditions. It could be anything. But if they're trying to bioengineer a virus to specifically increase human to human transmissibility, for example, infectiousness and or contagiousness, or to target certain ethnic groups. And I don't know if that's actually possible or not, but they've spoken about trying to do it. Obviously, that is bioweaponeering. And they've been quite open about it. That's the point I guess I want to make. But even with all of this open source information in front of us, and who knows how much in classified spaces, nobody in the U.S. government, whether it be Congress, the committees, the subcommittees that I have personally tried to contact with this information, or academia, the media, social media, except with the exceptions of great radio shows like yours, Matt, thank you. But in the main, or think tanks for that matter, they do not talk about the Chinese biological weapons program. And I really don't know why, when it's so much out there in our faces, but that's the case.
Well, that brings up a couple of points here. First, should the United States be funding anything to do with biolabs, regardless of the purpose, when those biolabs are located in China? I mean, that kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, me too. No, we should not be funding any kind of labs in China. For one thing, because the Chinese Communist regime uses a model that they call, in translation, the civilian-military fusion model. That means that any, let's say, biolab, whether it be at a university, a private, so-called private facility, or it's an outright PLA, People's Liberation Army, military facility, it's all connected. The Chinese regime has the right, the authority, and the power to demand the sharing of all data, you know, experiment results, et cetera, et cetera. It's a complete collaboration between the civilian and the military, is what I'm saying. So even if we, our scientists here, may think that they're collaborating with an institution, let's say formerly the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which of course contains many labs, but the one that we're concerned about is the BSL-4, Biosafety Level 4 lab, that was constructed, by the way, by the French, who eventually pulled out of collaboration there because they were very concerned about where the research there was going. But in any case, the Wuhan Institute of Virology ostensibly had been a civilian research facility. But we'll note, and this has been reported openly in the media, that by March, I think no later than March anyway, of 2020, one of the absolutely top bio weapons majors of the PLA, I should say Major General, Wen Che, or Che Wen. I might be slaughtering that name. But she, this top-ranked bioweaponeer officer of the PLA, was sent to the Wuhan Institute of Virology to take it over and manage whatever was going on there as the pandemic was now beginning to spread and be known around the world.
So that brings up the follow-on question. What was the pandemic? What was it really?
Well, it was the SARS-CoV-2. SARS-CoV-2 is the name of the virus. SARS is an abbreviation for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome dash COV, coronavirus virus dash 2, because the first one, back in 2003, wasn't called one at the time. It was just SARS, but now we call that one and this one two. So SARS-CoV-2, the virus, however it happened, and I'm not certain myself yet, although others like Li Mengyan, Dr. Li Mengyan, is certain that it was released deliberately. I'm not totally sure about that, but it got out. It got out of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The more we look, the earlier that escape or release or whatever it was seems to have happened, perhaps as early as mid-2019. And at that point, it began to spread first in Wuhan, the capital city of Hubei province, which is kind of in the mid sort of central south China on the map. And the Chinese regime knew that it was out, knew that it was spreading, and that's when they began measures that led to ultimately total lockdown of that city and other places too. Our own intelligence services, our own national security agencies must have known that this virus was out, however it was out, no later than fall of 2019, but they didn't say a word. And meanwhile, the Chinese communist regime under Xi Jinping deliberately allowed it to spread to the rest of the world while they were even in the process of locking down Wuhan. I mean, literally locking the city down. They were allowing flights out of Wuhan, not to the rest of China, but to the rest of the world. And we might recall that the first really bad outbreak that we were aware of took place in northern Italy, right? Mm-hmm. In Lombardy, yeah. The Lombardy region of northern Italy. And why? Why there? Because there is a thriving textile industry there, and the textile industry of Italy works very closely with the Chinese. And so the flights were going back and forth even after the Chinese regime knew that the virus was out and spreading. Whether they did it deliberately or not, it was out and spreading, and they deliberately let it go out to the rest of the world, Italy first, then the rest, deliberately knowing that they were going to spread this pandemic to the entire world eventually.
So based on what we know now, was SARS-CoV-2 a bioweapon?
Yes, it absolutely was. There's no question that it was bioengineered. And we know that because of certain features of the virus itself, having to do, for example, and very specifically, with the spike protein. Now, on the surface of that spiky ball that you sometimes see the images of, there are many proteins on the surface of that ball, the virus ball. But the spike protein is the one that we're really interested in here, because it was genetically manipulated, no question about it. It has something on the surface of the spike protein called the receptor binding domain. That is the area of the spike protein of the virus that connects, clamps on, because of the bioengineering, clamps on to what's called the ACE2 receptor, angiotensin converting enzyme 2. Don't remember that. ACE2 within the epithelial cell lining of the respiratory system, in particular the lungs. And because the spike protein was bioengineered with the insertion of something called a furin cleavage site, never mind all this stuff, but this is what they did to it, right, at the lab level. Because of the bioengineering of a furin cleavage site inserted at the S1-S2 junction of the receptor binding domain of the spike protein, it preferentially clamps onto the ACE2 receptors in the human body, the epithelial cell lining of the lungs. That's how we know that it was bioengineered.
Wow. So that brings up the next question, or actually kind of the last question I have for you today, and that is, what should the United States be doing right now as a foreign policy in regards to dealing with China, and not just in bioweapons, but in other things that are contributing to the bioweapons program in China? What should our policy be? Because it seems like we are, putting it politely, schizophrenic at the national level right now with our foreign policy.
Well, I would say the first thing is no more grants from the NIH for gain-of-function research, which, by the way, has just happened again. And those grants, again, go through EcoHealth Alliance. They go to certain labs in the United States, like the lab at the North Carolina University Chapel Hill campus, where Dr. Ralph Baric is the one who collaborated so closely with the Wuhan Institute of Virology and its leading, gain-of-function scientist, I guess, Xi Jingli, sometimes called the Bat Lady, who heads up one of the key laboratories inside of WIV. So no more grants to any institution doing gain-of-function research. That goes for the Galveston National Laboratory, which also had a very close relationship under its leadership. Dr. James LeDuc, now retired, as is Dr. Anthony Fauci, both retired, but close relationship with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That's first. But then openly putting the Chinese regime on notice. We know what you've done. We know what you are doing. We're not putting up with it anymore. Immediately stop. The collaboration stops. The funding stops. The scientific exchanges stop now. And you are going to be held accountable financially and otherwise for what you've done to the United States in terms of death and injuries and ruined lives and closed businesses and children without education. And hopefully the rest of the world would follow suit, but put China on notice, the regime of China, the Communist Party of China on notice. We know what you've done. We know what you are doing. We're not putting up with it anymore. Consequences begin right now.
If President Trump is reelected, you know, there are many people out there saying, you know, he should do this and do this. I really view China as the number one kind of top shelf priority of figuring out how to do it. And part of that solution, and even with the bioweapons program, is going to be addressing the economics and the technology transfers that have been happening that maybe indirectly contribute to that. What should we be doing as the United States in that regard?
Well, you know, Gordon Chang is one of our best experts in this country about China and a very good friend. And he advocates for complete decoupling, as he calls it, decoupling of the United States economy and academic exchanges and so forth from China. Now, I don't know how possible that is, certainly in any short-term span of time, but certainly in anything regarding national security or dual use that could apply to national security. And that includes things like our pharmaceutical drugs. That includes things like other kinds of technology. That certainly needs to be brought back home again. I know that we're building new microchip factories in the United States. That cannot happen fast enough, but that's the kind of thing with tax incentives, perhaps, if that's what's, you know, necessary to help encourage companies to bring production back home again. But anything, certainly national security or dual use technology related. And then have a look at the over 300,000 Chinese students who are granted F1 yes. student visas in this country every year. And no, they're not coming here to study gender studies, women's studies, or underwater basket weaving. They are coming here to study high-end nuclear physics and computer technology and so forth. Those visas need to be, if not cut off completely, certainly scrutinized a lot more closely and trimmed way back. The exchanges of scientists and researchers. I mean, we recently heard, I think it was last year, that something like 62 Chinese researchers had been working at Los Alamos, one of our top nuclear national laboratories. And oh, by the way, they had just left and gone back to China. That's got to stop. Confucius Institutes need to be shut down on campuses. And when they try to come back under sneaky other names, be aware of that too. Thousand Talents programs, which lure scientists, researchers, professors, department chairs at universities and so forth into financial relationships, those need to be stopped. There's just so many things that we could do and that I think Donald Trump in his second term will do.
I do too. And that's why the election coming up in 2024 is so important, not just Chinese bioweapons, but really the fate of Western civilization. I don't think we can understate that. So, Claire, thank you so much for joining me today. Is there any final words that you have for maybe the average American? Hey, I don't know if I can do anything at the national level, but what can I do here at the local level that would help the cause?
Well, you know, just be engaged as a citizen patriot. Be engaged at your local level. And by that, I mean knowing who your representatives are at different levels and different, you know, organizations, be it the city council, be it the library board, the school board, on up through state legislature, as you yourself once were there in the state of Washington. Be aware of these either candidates or the, you know, incumbent representatives. Share with them your thoughts, your concerns. Let them know what you're thinking. You know, and be an engaged citizen, but that means first an informed citizen. And for that, thanks again to you, Matt, and others like you who are bringing information to people like them.
Thank you for everything you're doing, Claire. I know you have a very busy schedule, but all of America really appreciates you getting the word out and getting people not just awakened, but moving to action. So God bless you and keep up the fight.
Thank you.
Claire Lopez, former CIA operations officer and strategic policy and intelligence expert. Claire M. Lopez at Twitter. So go follow her on Twitter. You can also find her at theunitedwest.org, unitedwest.org. And we are going to shift now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front, coming to us from Twitter. A couple of things. First of all, Travis is going to post this. This is probably the most important video you are going to watch, and it has exactly to do with what we just talked about with Chinese bioweapons. Kim.com posted it. It is a video from the European Parliament listing the history of what they knew and when, and that they actually knew 20 plus years ago that viruses were completely ineffective against coronavirus. That vaccines, were totally ineffective against coronavirus. Vaccines, totally ineffective. They knew it 20 years ago. And the reason is because of the mutation happening over and over and over and over and over again so quickly. So this video, again, Travis is showing it right now. Go watch this video. You can see it on Twitter. Engage with this. Share it with your friends and family. And for those family members who do not believe that there was nothing but greed, hubris, and enemies of the United States involved in this entire COVID pandemic, watch this video. Also want to take you next to open source intelligence. First of all, and probably the most important thing on here, former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev said today that the UK is leading an undeclared war against Russia and that British officials can now be considered legitimate military targets. That is another incremental escalation that we're seeing as the United States, the United Kingdom, are slowly being drawn into the conflict. Now, listen to this one. Very interesting as well. President of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, told Russian media that other nations should join the United State of Russia and Belarus, and that Russia would provide nuclear weapons to any who do. Why would they do that? Why would they decentralize nuclear weapons? Could it be so that a nuclear weapon could be detonated inside the United States of America or one of our allies, and they would have plausible deniability? I'll let you answer that question. Also on the radar screen, coming to us from Open Source Intelligence, serious clashes in northern Kosovo injured at least 30 NATO K4 peacekeepers and 52 Serbs over the weekend. The clashes came after ethnic Albanian mayors took office in the northern areas of Kosovo, which is a Serb majority, but they boycotted the April elections in protest. And the reason that that's important is it looks like that's becoming another front in the war between Russia and Ukraine. Serbia, a traditional Russian ally. NATO has been in there in Kosovo. They do not, several countries actually don't recognize Kosovo. And so NATO K4 troops right on the front line there, another potential flashpoint. Also, over the weekend, border clashes erupted between Iran and Afghanistan, a decades-long water dispute. Now, they're at the bargaining table, but you're going to continue to see this happen. Positioning between certain countries that are Sunni, like Pakistan, Afghanistan, Turkey, against Iran. Now, they're going to say that they're allies, but they're going to be jockeying for who's actually in charge. Understand that that's part of the Islamic mindset. Also want to point out, over the weekend as well, South American leaders are gathering, and actually over the beginning of this week, South American leaders are gathering in Brazil for a regional summit, the first since 2015, and Lula da Silva, the socialist president of Brazil now, is trying to bring all of these people together, including bringing Venezuela's much maligned dictator, Nicolas Maduro, to this confab so that they can develop essentially a South American union like the European Union. That is the purpose behind it, which ultimately would be used to subvert the United States of America. Also on the international front, coming to us from Debka File. The United Arab Emirates has quit the U.S. Combined Maritime Forces for non-response over Iran's seizure of tankers. Again, the feckless leadership out of the White House, contributing to the United States losing longtime allies in the Middle East. And what's very interesting about that, they specifically cited that the United States wouldn't even step in and take care of certain things because of an attempt to seek peace with Iran. This is kind of ridiculous. They seized foreign property. That's the whole point behind the security there in the Gulf. And right now, our allies really stepping back. Brings us to China again from the Epoch Times. Beijing exports religious suppression by printing propaganda in U.S. textbooks, from a report. The Chinese regime has exported its ultra-leftist suppression of religions to the United States through defamatory materials and college textbook, a new report has found. Titled Surveillance, Slander, and Censorship, the report released on May 25th by the New York-based Falun Dafa Information Center surveyed dozens of university campuses and concluded that, in fact, the Chinese are putting propaganda on our university campus. You don't say! Do we actually need a report for this? More importantly, it's so obvious now, the question has to become, if the United States government is not doing something about this, are they being complicit? That's really the question. That brings us next to Sam Faddis on the national front. Hey, FBI, I think we've found of those domestic violent extremists that you're looking for, at least one of them anyway. Well, there's domestic violent extremists that Sam Faddis is talking about, and I want you to understand context here. Now we're seeing jihadis in America become very vocal. Within our lifetime is referenced to the hope that Israel will be wiped from the face of the earth. It is a branch of the Students for Justice in Palestine, or the SJP. And, oh, by the way, the person linked to this is also linked to the SJP. Is also linked to terror groups such as Hamas, Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and the Marxist Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine. I want to say something very quickly. If you have not read the book, Disinformation, by General Mihai Pachipa, the highest-ranking Soviet defector to the United States, he lays out how they sent 4,000 KGB agents into Islamic organizations in the Middle East by the early 1970s. So people that say, oh, totally set. No, they're very much one and the same. That's why you'll see these connections cross over between communists and jihadis almost every time. Now, article does a great job talking about this, but my point in bringing it up is now we're seeing the jihadis ramp up more vocally against the United States. And so we need to be very, very attuned to what is happening and if this starts happening in your local area or region. That brings us next on the national front to the FBI. Coming to us from Gateway Pundit, update. Chris Wray did not admit FBI had damning Biden China bribery document until James Comer notified him he had already seen the filing. In other words, a whistleblower given him the filing, and the FBI was trying to obfuscate, divagle, obscure completely so that people didn't see this. And yet, this just shows a total and complete lack of integrity by the FBI. That organization needs to be completely dismantled, rebuilt from the ground up, especially the counterterrorism portion of it. It is just far too compromised. That brings us next to the regional front. And I want to make sure that everybody sees this article too. This is from the IdahoTribune.org. And what happened is a left-wing extremist says he will give transphobic people the death penalty, and he makes terroristic threats. And he does this, well, absolutely to North Idaho Gun Club, and he's a licensed clinical professional counselor. He was wearing a altered red MAGA hat that said maggots and an Alexandria, well, an AOC t-shirt when he entered the Fernand Rod and Gun Club requesting information on joining the range. The man stated that he wanted to learn how to use his pistols to shoot racist Trump blank. I'm not going to repeat that. Folks, this happened in our area. I want everybody that you know to take this article. Travis is going to make sure that this is posted. Take this article, share it, retweet it, like it, comment on it, post it on your own personal Facebook pages and every other social media thing you have. Everybody needs to see this. This guy needs to be a household name. This is incredible. Wow. All right, and that brings us next. We're going to go back to the World Economic Forum, but I want to do a quick video on the CEO of Pfizer refusing a question of a reporter showing that he knew the vax didn't work.
People were like, can I ask you, when did you know that the vaccines didn't stop transmission? How long did you know that without saying it publicly?
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. Answer that question. I mean, we now know that the vaccines didn't stop transmission, but why did you keep it secret? You said it was 100% effective, then 90%, then 80%.
Well, that's an extremely good question. And I think we know the answer now. Which brings us next to the World Economic Forum wants you to get rid of your dogs. And, well, let's just go ahead and show that headline.
EF, which has ordered mainstream media outlets to begin pushing the narrative, wants to introduce an international policy that would require the majority of pet owners to euthanize their animals. CNN, always at the forefront in pushing the globalist agenda, has begun urging its viewers to starve their pets to death in an effort to combat climate change. CNN published an article on their website recently entitled, Our Pets Are Part of the Climate Problem. These tips can help you minimize their carbon paw prints. In the article, the liberal sadists at CNN carbon argue that the meat-heavy diet of many household pets is causing planet-warming gases to be released into the atmosphere. Responsible pet owners should trade in their best friend for a turtle for the planet. Snakes, turtles, and reptiles can have a really low impact, CNN suggests.
So you want to fight the WEF, get married, have as many kids as you possibly can, and make sure that every single one of them has their own pet dog. That's how we fight. No turtles, we want dogs. Fact, you're telling me you're coming against this kind of cuteness? Go ahead and roll it, Travis. That's our little puppy, Zoe. Look at how cute that dog is. You telling me that dog needs to, like, eat bugs or be put down because of her paw print or carbon paw print? Give me a break. All right. I also want to end the show here. I think we got enough time because they do want us to eat bugs. And this is so ridiculous. People are like, it's just not true, Pastor. Yes, it is. Travis has done a fantastic job, put together a montage for all of you on eating bugs. And that is a tarantula.
Earlier this year, the United Nations held a global conference on the benefits of eating insects, even suggesting it might be a good solution to world hunger.
We've been educating thousands of people all over the world about edible insects, specifically crickets. We call them the gateway bug. because we're still a very, very fortunate family. There are other people around the world that do not have that opportunity. And as our population grows to 9 billion people by the year 2050, our current agricultural practices are not going to stand. We need to find new ways to feed our growing population.
Silkworm larva, stir-fried with soy, sugar, and just a dash of white pepper.
Silkworms have texture of like popcorn, and they have a creamy center.
Even scorpions on shrimp toast.
Scorpions still have the stingers in them, but yeah, they are dried, so the poison is neutralized.
A 6-ounce serving of these crunchy bugs have 60% less saturated fat as the same amount of ground beef.
And now the ants. They taste a little sour, tangy, and they have a hint of black pepper tone.
Sour pepper tone ants.
Call me old-fashioned, but I think bugs need to be squished. And by the way, if you want to eat bugs, you first. You first. All right, a real quick announcement. Tomorrow we have our annual community garage sale here at On Fire Ministries, 115 East Pacific. Look forward to seeing you all there. And if you get a chance, check out Valarum as an alternative currency, or at least alternative to gold. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you. And he is making this generation the greatest one. The awakening is here. Keep up the fight.